Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve?
Hey, everybody. This is Harvey Sluggo Wasserman, back for the 73rd, count them, 73 Grassroots Emergency Election Protection Coalition group meetings. We are action-packed today, totally full of huge issues to deal with in terms of our fading democracy. We want to talk about the National Voting Rights Acts, the two of them before Congress. We also are going to talk about a national campaign to make sure those get passed and become law, because if they don't, we are going to be in a fascist country. It's as clear as that. We have the great Andrea Miller on with us and Ray McClendon to talk about the kind of grassroots organizing we need to do leading up to the 2022 and 24 elections. We need a permanent grassroots presence in democracy centers and elsewhere. We have Jan Bendor on with us from Michigan to talk about their great campaign there. I see Ray McClendon. How you doing, Ray? And this is being recorded in part for the Progressive Radio Network, the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show, which airs every Thursday, 5 p.m. on the podcast from Gary Knoll's Progressive Radio Network. So it's great to see everybody with us. And we are going to proceed. We're going to start with Hetty Tripp from St. Cloud, Minnesota, where she has brought the Attorney General of the state of Minnesota a great and very important piece of the political scene in America, Keith Ellison. He's going to be on with us next week. Hetty is going to show us a few of the questions that we may ask him next week, but we are really going to focus with him also after a period of time with the Minnesota issues to talk about the national campaigns that we need to do. Hetty, are you with us? Can you show real quickly the questions we have outlined? We have 70 people, 71, 72 on the call with us now. And Hetty Tripp, are you available? Can you join us real quick to talk about next week with Keith Ellison? And we do want everyone, please, to join us next week with the Attorney General of the state of Minnesota to deal with some key issues up there, and then to segue into the national strategy. Hetty, are you there? Can you tell us real quickly what's going to happen next week?
Yeah, I'm going to share screen.
Go for
it. Can you see that?
Yes.
All right. So this is how it's going to be laid out. I'll very briefly introduce myself, then introduce Keith. I will get from his office how he would like to be introduced. Keon, the outreach coordinator, will also be on the Zoom, and he's the one that is working right now getting all the details in terms of the questions that we put to him. I was just telling Joel that Keith actually does have a book out. It's his memoir bio. It's called My Country, 'Tis of Thee, My Faith, My Family, Our Future. This is before he became AG, but people might be interested in that. I'll put it in the chat in a little bit. So the first 15 minutes will just be focused on Minnesota. These are the several questions that we are going to, that he has been given, and they're working on, and so he will do basically a presentation that will cover these questions.
Okay.
And then I'd like him to end by his story on how he stopped the militia from bringing guns to the polling stations. And then I'm going to give it over to Joel, who will look at the bigger picture, work with other AGs, and then how to pass the Voter Rights Acts.
That's beautiful. And of course, this issue of bringing guns to polling locations is going to be a big deal, as we're going to talk in the second hour today, once we're passed and have dealt with the voting rights issues today. Unfortunately, sadly, is the anniversary of the killing of John Kennedy. And we do want to devote at least part of the second hour to dealing with that, and also with this horrendous court decision freeing up this young kid who, you know, we all want to ask ourselves if this kid who went and shot up the rally in Wisconsin had been black and turned up at a Trump rally and killed or shot three people, you know, would he be alive today? I think the question answers itself. So we will talk about that in the second hour, as we also revisit the question. We can take a poll. Who killed John Kennedy? I know the answer, and maybe some of you do too. Certainly Tatanka does, and we'll talk about that. So we're going to start now with the really big issue, the issue of the future of our country. I'll let Joel Siegel introduce Ray McClendon and Andrea Miller. We want to talk about the two voting rights acts that are in front of Congress. Once they get past this the second infrastructure bill, or the build back, whatever it's called, we will see how that goes. And then the real nitty gritty of these voting rights acts is going to come on, and we're joined. And of course, Ray and Andrea, we are hoping that you'll join us next week as well with Keith Ellison, so that we can get further into the nitty gritty of this national imperative to get these two bills passed, and then to build a grassroots national campaign. So Joel, if you'll do the honors with the great Andrea Miller and the great Ray McClendon, that would be great.
Before I start, I just want to say that time for you to get a haircut, Harvey.
Okay, thanks.
You look like a Jewish left-wing hippie. No, I'm kidding.
Oh. what else could I look like? Go ahead.
No, you look good. Happy Thanksgiving to everybody. You know, the history of Thanksgiving is very tragic, but it is a time to be with our family and loved ones. So happy Thanksgiving. I want to thank Hetty for, first of all, bringing in Keith Ellison. We were very close colleagues in Congress because we were about the same age. And he was just, he set the Congress on fire when he got there. And, sadly, he left. But there's just so much leadership potential there. I mean, I'm hoping that what we can do with Keith is have Keith bring together really important organizations and leaders so we can start coordinating our efforts, whether it's voting laws that need to get passed, or the, you know, democracy centers, or the Georgia Way, because Keith is quite a force of nature. I don't know if people know, but he was the deputy director of the DNC. And, he left and he became attorney general and did a great job on the George Floyd case. In fact, one of my best colleagues from law school actually tried the case, Jerry Blackwell. The reason why it is so important that we focus on the democracy centers and the Georgia Way is I don't see, and Harvey and many of us just don't see, how are we going to, you know, stop authoritarianism, stop Jim Crow authoritarianism, stop gerrymandering, voter suppression, unless we have a systematic comprehensive plan. And the genius of the voting centers and relational organizing, they're all connected in that if you don't make a connection with people that you want to vote, it's harder when voting time comes around to go door to door. And let's say the person doesn't know you and you say, well, we want you to vote for this candidate. But what if you've done what Ray McClendon just did, which was to give turkeys and food for the poor, especially in the African-American community. So then next time when you say, hey, you know, have you registered to vote? They're like, hey, you know, aren't you the organization that fed my family when we didn't have any food over Thanksgiving? It's what Ray calls relational organizing. And then where they're very simpatico is you need a place to house the voting centers. And Andrea had developed this plan years ago, and she was way ahead of everybody, I think. And if we remember the Black Panthers, in a way, the Black Panthers, who were completely discredited and destroyed by J. Edgar Hoover, in a way, they had established community centers, you know, all throughout Chicago and in different cities. They were very successful. But what we want to be able to do is have a series of symposiums, webinars, so that we can teach democracy centers and the Georgia Way to the broadest possible influencers that we can. Because if people don't really know about what a democracy center is or what relational organizing is, it's going to be harder to influence the folks that we're going to need to get involved in this movement. And I'll close by saying that certainly with the Democratic Party, of which I've been affiliated with for over 42 years, this you know, sort of paradigm of let's raise a lot of money and then put people on television, that's not going to work. Let's run candidates who are sort of center right. Usually they're white and they usually have a lot of money. That's not going to work either. We want to challenge the status quo, maximize GOTV and voter registration in communities of color and in university communities. But here's what's important. We have to get funding. If we can get the fund, and Ray's going to go through what his strategy is, if we can get funding to fully fund the voting centers and relational organizing, we can really change the country and stop the worst elements of this far right Jim Crow authoritarian movement. And that's all I want to say. I don't know of any other way where we can stop the right wing from taking over the Congress and more general assemblies unless we move to a whole new methodology of getting people to the polls registered, you know, to vote. And without further ado, let's go ahead and get started. But Andrea has to leave, I think, early. But Andrea, you want to talk kind of about where we're at with the voting centers and what do you think we need to do to really get this off the ground? Because you've done all the pioneering work. Now people got to help you.
For those of you who don't know, Andrea Miller is one of the great pioneers of computerization and in relation to grassroots organizing. And she and Ray were instrumental in winning the Georgia miracle, now the Georgia way, that has changed the country, helped put Joe Biden in the White House, and certainly won those two senatorial seats that gave the Democrats sort of control of the Senate. And without Andrea and Ray's pioneering work, grassroots organizing in this country would be light years behind where it needs to be. So let's start with Andrea, an absolute genius and a tremendous force in American grassroots politics. Andrea, please.
Oh, thank you, Harvey. Thank you, Joel. I'm Andrea Miller with Center for Common Ground, and I live in Virginia, and a lot of people on this call may be aware that Virginia just had a little election, and it was with one of those rich candidates who figured, I can raise a lot of money, ergo, I can just jump in front of two Black women running for governor, and everybody will want to elect me. Well, not only did people not want to elect him, he got the smallest number of votes of any of the three candidates running for statewide office. And he so depressed the vote that we were originally 10 seats up in the Virginia House. Now we are struggling to end up tying for control of the Virginia House. But the good news that emerged from that very, very, very unfortunate election was that democracy centers worked. Originally, when I came up with the idea back in 2015, my idea was that we would create these things solely in the South, and that is still my idea. They are designed to really support identity politics, where we go into communities, Black, Hispanic, Native American, AAPI, where when we look at who can vote versus who does vote, we are finding a 50% or more disconnect on voters of color who have just totally given up on the system and don't bother to vote anymore. So that is where we locate democracy centers. And another huge difference. The only people who can work at democracy centers as paid organizers are people who literally live in that community. So they know the people in the community. They know what the pain points are. And when they go knock on the door, they can go, "Hi, I'm Zeta and I live over on Crawford Avenue. I want to talk to you about what's going on in our community. Do you have a couple of minutes?" "All right. Do you folks have kids?" "Yeah, we do." "Great. Do you know about the $3,000 per child that you can get?" Now, isn't that a great way to start a conversation and be like, "What? In the American Rescue Plan, there is $3,000 per child for children 6 to 17. If you've got younger children, it's $3,600 per child. Are you telling me you never signed up?" So number one, we're doing two things. We're letting people know that there are things that are out there that can help them. We're also subtly, without saying, "This is the Democrats that did this for you," we're letting people know where this came from, and then we can work on signing people up right now. I'm going to share my screen, because while we've only passed Bill Back Better in the House, I need to share my screen. Somebody make me a co-host and do it now. I want to show you one of the little tools that we are working on. Thank you. That will help us as we are talking to people on the doors and people when they come in to pick up their food baskets about Build Back Better. So this is a little app, and we will put it on our Outreach Circle app. And it literally is walking people through all the different things that they might be very, very interested in. And so we actually have a little survey where we ask them what's important. So if they tell us they have children, then we're going to tailor this and get it more localized, more down to what individual families can get per child. Then people, we can literally show them right here what this is. So I just talked about the $3,600 and the $3,000. And then if people want lower drug costs, if this is what they need, we have items like this. Now, the tools that we use, Outreach Circle, it would allow people, if they see something that really excites them, to share it directly with their neighbors. So they don't have to give us their neighbors' phone numbers. They don't.
We just lost your sound. Can we hear me? Andrea, your sound went out.
Yeah, Andrea has rural internet, so she kind of freezes sometimes, but she'll be back with us before too long.
Okay, so this, for those of you not familiar, a democracy center, it means to be a small office in the counties and storefronts. Howie Hawkins, who's on the call from the Green Party, has such a storefront in Syracuse, New York, and we are looking to use these storefronts and democracy centers as the key centers for building a national grassroots movement. While we're waiting for Andy to come back, you're back. Okay, go ahead.
I'm back. Well, it's not only having them located, it is having all the policies that people need, having tools that make delivering this information very, very easy to local people. So democracy centers are a combination of our old-fashioned 1960s organizing combined with the best of 21st century technology, because people do have cell phones. So everything they need, we are literally bringing it to their cell phones. When our folks go out and canvass, they have palm cards that reflect the issues of their community. So everything is community centric. Nothing is generic. And that is what is so important. So with our existing democracy centers, and I had never planned on having any in Virginia, but with the existing ones in a little southwest city called Roanoke, their community, 55% of the Black voters did not vote. They got 18% of the Black voters out for early voting, and 71% of the city of Roanoke turned out to vote in a state election. And these were little ladies who literally lived in the hood, knocking on the doors of their neighbors, and their neighbors inviting them to come and host events in their community, saying, well, yeah, I really love that basket you gave me. Could you come to our community and talk to my neighbors about what you told me? So that is what we are doing. We don't just show up. We are in the neighborhood and get other blocks to invite us to talk to other people on their blocks.
Fantastic, fantastic work, Andrea. I want to go straight to, we have people waiting to ask questions, but I want to go straight to Ray McClendon. How long can you stay with us, Andrea?
I'm going to be here another 15 minutes.
Okay, Ray, can you jump in and then we will...
Yeah, I'll be real quick.
We'll go open it up to both.
I'll be real quick. We know that the Georgia way, how we won the election in Georgia, we want to replicate. And the book is now out. Thanks to Steve Rosenfeld, Joel, Harvey, Andrea, and others for really pulling together the grassroots folks that Andrea has been talking about were the ones that were giving firsthand accounts on how they made a difference turning out the vote. And to her point about Roanoke, what happened, remember, in Georgia was that typically in Georgia in a runoff election, like we had it for the two Senate seats, you will have a drop from the general election to the runoff of anywhere from 50 to 55% to 60%, 65%. 65% would be great in a runoff to have that amount of the vote compared to the general to turn back out. We had 95% of the Black vote turn back out for the runoffs. That's the power of relational organizing. That's the power of the type of investment in local communities that democracy centers represent. Now, there were a lot of other players that don't even know what a democracy center is, but the idea and the principles of democracy centers is at work in and around the state, and we want to replicate that in other states. So what we're doing now is looking to take what we've learned and take it across states that have significant percentage of eligible voters who are people of color, primarily across the what I call the Southern Crescent, from Virginia coming down through the Carolinas, Georgia, Florida, and over to the Gulf states, and to focus our attention on creating these democracy centers, creating a relational organizing strategy year round. The critical thing is year round. Joel alluded to passing out turkeys. We did that on Saturday. We did that for Christmas last year. And so what we're doing is making those connections with the community so that when we turn around to talk to them about voting, we already are a credible, trusted source within the community. Andrea also talked about pain points. The critical difference on a grassroots strategy is that you are going from bottom-up concerns and not top-down concerns. A lot of times the national interests and the national media are talking about these broad programs, but we have to be able to connect with people where, at their point of pain by understanding what makes a difference in their lives. In the runoffs, one of the fundamental things that we led with was, if you want a $1,400 check, you need to get these two senators elected. Real simple. That was it. It wasn't about the Senate and the history and everything else. These were people out of work at the time, and we needed to get them to understand that we could make an immediate difference in their lives, because for a lot of people, that was a great deal of money. So when Andrew is talking about these palm cards and having some specific points, that is identifying the people at their point of need and giving them the opportunity to say, these people care about me. My voice can be heard, and it will address my specific issues and interests. So that's where we want to go, and that's what we want to teach across all of these states. So as we move forward, we got to start in January. And so we'll be launching with Joel Harvey and many others' help here, two key organizations to implement the strategies that many of these grassroots organizations are already involved with, because we got to have an infrastructure that we invest in. We cannot rely on the Democratic Party. We must put this to work now if we're going to save this democracy and prohibit Republican takeover that will lead to anarchy. So I'll leave it right there, but you'll be hearing more about it in December, and we hope to launch and be able to expand these democracy centers and similar activities of relational organizing starting in earnest in other states in January.
Great. That's fantastic. I want to mention that, thank you so much, Ray. I'll mention the great Jennifer Roberts is on the call with us, former mayor of Charlotte, also Thomas Pogge from Yale. I want to specifically call on Jan Bandor to make sure that you are all connected. Jan Bandor has been doing this kind of organizing in Michigan, and they're pushing for a referendum in Michigan right now. Jan, can you unmute and tell us very quickly, before we go to questions, what you're doing in Michigan? Is incredibly important. There are 86 people on the call, and we're really thrilled to have you. So go ahead.
Well, thank you very much, Harvey. There's a lot of gloom and doom right now, and I would like to put in a little ray of sunshine. 26 states have, in their state constitutions, the right of initiative and referendum. And if you want to look up your state, go to the Center for Initiative and Referendum in California, and you'll see what you're listed for. And that gives us a tremendous tool. In 2018 in Michigan, we used that tool to reform the redistricting situation, to take redistricting out of the hands of politicians in the legislature. And our principle at that time was, don't trust the legislature. What they give, they can take it away. And I have the same feeling about what Congress is supposedly doing with the right to vote right now. What the legislature giveth, they can take away, and that is what's happened all along. So if it isn't in your Constitution, it might not really be secure. So we're going to do it again. We're going to put the right to vote, a fundamental enumerated right to vote, in our state constitution. We looked at all 50 states, and thank you, Stephen, for your help on that research. And not a single state has a fundamental enumerated right to vote in their state constitution. They talk about fair and equal elections and a lot of other stuff. The United States Constitution does not have a fundamental right to vote. And I can say that because the U.S. Supreme Court said that in Bush v. Gore. That there isn't a fundamental right to vote.
There's a referendum nothing, now in Michigan.
I'm sorry?
You're pushing a referendum now in Michigan.
So what we're doing, we've written a proposal to go on the ballot for next fall that establishes a fundamental right to vote in Article 1 of our state constitution, which has 26 other rights, including the right to have, genetic research, all kinds of great stuff, nothing about voting. And we are doing this on the basis that if the right to vote is not a fundamental enumerated right in a constitution, the court does not have to apply what's called strict scrutiny. Strict scrutiny is the question, well, if you guys want to put barriers in front of people to vote, why is that so necessary? What is the compelling government reason for that? Well, all of this stuff about, oh, there might be fraud. No, that's not a compelling reason. You got to show actual proof.
So you are doing a grassroots campaign, and I hope you're going to coordinate with Andrea and with Ray. And we need voting.
We definitely need endorsements from all around the country. This is something that has to happen in all 26 states that can do this.
Put your contacts in the chat. We need you linked up to the grassroots campaigning, the Georgia Way, with Ray and Andrea.
We are going to need 500,000 signatures to put this on the Michigan ballot next November. We're going to need $6 million, so we are looking for money. It's a huge thing, and we hope we will inspire other states to do this, because if 26 states do this, we will be somewhere.
Yes, and also the organizing for the campaigns in 26 states will be huge, and Andrea and Ray will know certainly how to do that. So get the Georgia Way. Ray, you mentioned the Georgia Way. Thank you, Jan Bendor. It's an honor to have you on with us, and your work is spectacular. Ray, where do people get the Georgia Way book and documentary now? Now that it's done,
it's on Andrea's website.
And Andrea, can you put that in the chat, or have you already? How to get the Georgia Way a book and documentary film? We're joined by the great Alan Minsky, the executive director of PDA. Thank you for joining us, Alan. Andrea's time is limited, so we want to get questions to her. Joel Siegel, if you'll start, please. And again, thank you, Jen, and really great to have you on with Brian Steinberg also from Ann Arbor. So go ahead, Joel.
Yeah, Lynn Feinerman had a very important question about the idea of a national call-in day on John Lewis bill or any other, there are only really two major bills. And Andrew and I had discussed doing a national call-in day through Center for Common Ground and PDA and GREET. But Andrew, just your thoughts on if we do a national call-in day, who do we call and how would it be effective?
Well, number one, there are 200 groups that are doing major events around both the Freedom to Vote Act and the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act. The things that are currently standing in their way is the bills are in the Senate, and in order to pass a bill in the Senate, you need either A, 60 votes, not going to happen, or B, you need to reform the filibuster, at which point you can vote using only 50 votes. The problem in the Senate is Senator Kyrsten Sinema of Arizona and Senator Joe Manchin of West Virginia. They are saying they're not really feeling reforming the filibuster. And even though Senator Joe Manchin is one of the authors of the Freedom to Vote Act, he's one of the authors of the Freedom to Vote Act, and he tinkered around a little with the John Lewis Voting Rights Advancement Act, and Senator Lisa Murkowski is on it. We are not going to get any more Republicans to come across the aisle. So we need to reform the filibuster, number one, and then ensure that both Manchin and Sinema will A, vote to reform the filibuster, and then vote for the bills. So again, 48 senators are already on both bills. They are not the problem. So we do need to push them to reform the filibuster. That's when Democratic senators get a little weird on you because they expect to not be in power and they want to hang on to that outmoded filibuster saying, oh, well, you know, we would be able to filibuster bad things. You would be able to. You never did before.
Right. And now what we need to do, as Joe has mentioned, National Call-In Days, maybe we need a national a call devoted strictly to getting these two bills passed. I mean, there is the option, as we've mentioned before in this call, of an executive order. There's also a possibility of a cutout on the filibuster. Ray McClendon, right. Do you want to jump on that? And how do we get the grassroots pressure from around the country to get these two incredibly important bills passed? Because if the gerrymander goes unchecked, if all these restrictive laws go unchecked, we're not going to have anything near a Democratic election. Ray, do you want to comment on that?
Well, I totally agree with what Andrew has just shared, and that is that we've got to reform filibuster, and we've got to get folks to understand the urgency in the Senate. The Senate level of urgency has got to go up from the point that Andrea just made, that they are looking at a time when they won't be in power but can use the filibuster. We're talking about potentially losing our democracy if we don't get these voting rights acts passed. So I think that we have got to raise the stakes, and it starts with the same grassroots efforts that we've been talking about, and that is that you've got to get people energized and enthusiastic on the grassroots level to challenge the powers that be. And we're not there because we are so fragmented in terms of messaging by the national Democratic leadership. So we're ready to go to work on that. We're prepared to do it immediately. And anything that starts, as it did with last year with George Floyd, anything that starts with the people, I think will have a much stronger opportunity to pass if we can get more grassroots initiative behind it.
Well, so what we need basically, maybe, and we'll discuss it, is a national call-in, at least, and do these national call-ins to build the support for these two bills, or else we're really in deep trouble. Let me call on, we have 90 people on the call. Let me go to, actually, Alan Minsky, you just jumped in. I'm sorry to jump ahead of folks, but Alan with PDA, can we coordinate with you to do a national call-in, a Zoom call, or some kind of gathering to focus people's attention and activism on getting these two bills passed? Because clearly without them, we're nowhere. Alan Minsky, do you want to comment on that from PDA? And then we'll jump to the regular queue.
I see his mouth moving, but there's no sound, so I don't
Alan,
know.
Alan, you're
issue.
Looks like are you going to pick up your daughter again? I think last week, a couple weeks ago, you had to pick up your daughter from the phone. So if you can get,
can you hear me now?
Yes, yes.
Good. Okay, sorry. We will absolutely do that 100%. We did have some people on from DFAD yesterday on our call, which is it's an umbrella organization, but we, of course, would love to have Ray, Andrea, et cetera, on a national call, and we will always be ready, whether before or after that call, to organize our people for a national call-in date. Absolutely, 100%, times 100%.
Let's do that. You know, maybe next week we can tie in Keith Ellison. Maybe we can set a date and let's segue into a national call. We have got to get these two bills passed. Absolutely. Alan, I'm always nervous when someone's on there when they're driving. But thank you. I'm glad.
Sure. Thank you.
Okay, brother. Stay with us if you can. Let's go to the stack here. Justin LeBlanc, I believe you were first. Go ahead.
Yes. So point of information on
the internet connection that Andrea dropped out, a piece of information that we all should know is that a lot of these carriers are trying to prioritize business over customers, prioritize rich over poor. So 99.99% of the bandwidth goes to people in more affluent communities rather than rural or poor communities. And so we're going to need to grassroots organize, I think, around even just being able to get on Zoom calls pretty soon. Now on to the specifics. So I had been talking personally, even before COVID, with the churches that I know on the idea that, hey, we get relevance by helping out widows and orphans and poor and people who are marginalized. Because when people see that the least, the most troubled people, the most needy people, the most requiring support actually get served, other people will come along and say, hey, yeah, there's an impact here. We should do that ourselves. We should join. And so I totally agree with these centers, democracy centers, especially using them as voting centers at the same time. That's genius. And what I wanted to ask is specifically, so Rich Procida is on this call. Ray McClendon knows Reverend Barber. What can churches do? Because they have a lot of people, a lot of money, and a lot of passion.
And that's great. Some of our democracy centers are actually located in churches, and we are partnered with five national faith groups because faith groups have people. That is why we have 44,000 volunteers to man our phone banks, write postcards, and do other things. So in 2020, we did outreach to 14 million voters, and it was all volunteer driven. So what we're doing now is we are recruiting people in the communities where we were doing outreach to be able to reach out to their own neighbors, going, now we're going to start moving from totally remote to remote plus local.
Fantastic, fantastic. Ray, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, I just want to echo that. Andrea, spot on. And just to add to that, that in the Black community, especially our pastors, imams, etc., are valuable leaders in the community. They are independent to a great degree, which allows them to the flexibility to speak out more forcefully on issues. And that tradition we can leverage tremendously. They need infrastructure, though. And once again, that's what Andrea's platform, digital platform, along with Democracy Centers, gives them a template where they don't have to reinvent the wheel. And so that's what we're trying to do here, is to get this infrastructure out to like-minded leaders so they can focus on leading and not have to focus so much on tying up their energy in putting the infrastructure in place from scratch.
And Joel Siegel, you're on with us. You are the master of setting up these fantastic national Zoom calls where we can focus with leadership like Andrea and Ray and hopefully Keith Ellison and others. So if you'll take the lead, can we nominate you to take the lead in setting up the next national Zoom call to focus entirely on getting these voting rights bills passed, and then following up with the democracy centers around the country. Can you take that on?
Yeah, most definitely. And I also want to mention too that we're going to have a flyer that Andrew is going to do when Representative Keith Ellison is our special guest Monday. But if everyone can send that flyer out to all your whether it's Facebook walls or to your friends, colleagues, family members, we need several hundred people on that call, because Representative Ellison, he has to be heard by a lot of people, and it will help legitimize what we're doing if he really sees a lot of love. But yeah, I will definitely that's why we created NPAC, so the National Progressive Action Coalition. Tataka has been really in leadership of that. We're having organizing meetings, and that'll be our first national effort will be that day. And remember, there were over 232 leaders and organizations on our call, but we've had to really do some very careful organizing. But we have a lot of people, yeah.
And Mike Hirsch is going to be doing the flyers. So, Mike, we're looking for your genius to get this out as soon as possible. Everybody on the call will get a copy of the flyer about the Keith Ellison appearance next week. And then we will establish as quickly as possible a national Zoom to push these two voting rights acts, because without them, we're toast. Okay, Jim Soper and then Ruth Strauss, Dorothy Reich, and George Ripley. Jim, go ahead. And please focus your questions to Andrea, because she does have to go.
I'll pass on that one, and please keep me on the stack. But
okay. Thank you, Jim. Ruth Strauss? Dr. Ruth, you there? And then Dorothy Reich, if you'll...
I'm here. Andrea, I have had so much trouble. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah. Is Andrea still there?
Yes.
I have had so much trouble getting in touch with you all to sign up. Or in fact, when the last elections were, I went on the website. I went to Center for Common Ground. I'm sure you had way too many emails to attend to personally, but I just could not get a way to volunteer, which I desperately wanted to do. And in fact, I even ended up calling the Georgia NAACP and tried to get in to help, with voting.
Ruth, here's how our volunteers work. If you want a text, it's right on our website. This is where you go if you want to sign up to text. Phone banks has their own page. Postcards have their own page. We have videos on everything.
I'm sorry. I did go to the website to try to sign up, and something, I never got signed up.
Or maybe, Andrea, if you'll give Ruth a personal connection on the chat, that would be great.
She asked to tell me what she wants to do.
Volunteer to call people for getting out the vote. Anything that you all want a warm body for.
All right. Okay. You're going to call Gabriel at centerforcommonground.org for phone banks. And again, the links are right on the website.
Okay, keep trying. We'll try again. Ruth is a great activist, and we're glad to have her with us, and very persistent. Yes. So let's reach out
to Gabe. We have people who manage everything we do.
Dorothy Reich. Dorothy, are you unmuted?
Yeah. So what I don't understand is why our messaging doesn't include the fact that if the Republicans get the Senate, they will not hesitate to end the filibuster, put through every bad law they want, and then put it right back. What are we, idiots?
Yeah.
They
reformed the filibuster to be able to appoint Supreme Court justices. Right. I mean, they didn't hesitate. We want to do the justices. They reformed it.
Reform is, by the way, and speaking of idiots, I'm going to print up a bumper sticker that says no more Terry McAuliffe's.
Anywhere.
No more Terry McAuliffe.
Meanwhile, when we're doing our mailers, when we're doing our postcards, when we're doing our phone banking, when we're doing our messaging, we need to put in that that is a bogus argument, because the Republicans will end the filibuster and do what they want to do. And then if they want, they'll put it back. Why do we think that they will honor the filibuster? They don't honor anything. We have to put this in the message. It has to be in the phone call. This is ridiculous. When we call our congressman, we have to tell them that.
Andrea's laughing
because she knows it's true.
Go ahead.
You all know it's true.
I just wanted to add that Andrea's platform is certainly working. We were able to touch between early voting is going on in Atlanta right now for our mayoral runoff. And we touched over 26,000 voters via text in like 3.5 days.
Wow.
Okay. And we and the phone banks are up and running right now. So you know, we are adding to our arsenal through Andrea's platform, and we're getting ready for 2022. So this is working. The other thing that I want to say about what you talked about with no more Terry McAuliffe's, we tried that in Georgia for years and years and years, trying to run center right candidates for Senate and for governor. None of it worked until we put in place a Jewish candidate and an African-American candidate that ran on progressive platforms, and we got over the top. So we need to get away from this notion if we can just have something that looks like them, light, no pun intended, that we can make it. We need to go to our base, and that's what finally I hope we can do with these democracy centers, where we'll have information saying this is what it's going to take to get your base out, to have your base enthusiastic, and have the documented evidence to show that, so that we get away from this. And we got to be ready in the primaries. Primaries is where 10% or 15% of the electorate can make decisions. And I think that's probably one of the reasons Andrea and I haven't really talked about it, but I think that's probably one of the reasons McAuliffe could sneak in, because he had more name recognition and more money up front where there was going to be light turnout. So we've got to be ready for the primaries in May and June, March, April, May, and June of 2022. So the work starts in January.
And, you know, the immediate response to the drubbing that Terry McAuliffe gave us all was, oh, it's the fault of the left. I mean, the Democratic Party's platform is lose the election, blame the left, and then do it again. And that has got to stop. I have a piece about that at Reader's Supported News, rsn.org. I'll put it in the chat. I believe it's the lead article at Reader's Supported News that talks about this and how the Georgia miracle or the Georgia way really showed us the alternative. But we can't win with these stiff Republican corporate candidates. I mean, it's ridiculous. He was a horrible candidate, as my fellow Wolverine Steve Spitz pointed out last week. We can't win with people like these. So your suggestion, Ray, on the primaries is absolutely essential. And if we have grassroots organizations that can get people out in the primaries to get decent candidates, that's where we can really make a difference right up front. So thank you for that. George Ripley. George?
Thank you, Harvey. In response to your question earlier, how do we build pressure on senators to end the filibuster? My first thought was that labor is leading the revolution right now. You know, labor strikes all over the country on all kinds of issues. Bernie did a great job of interviewing a bunch the other night on November 3rd. He had a great piece with them. And so I'm wondering if, you know, the Declaration for American Democracy has union leaders in their organization. And I wonder if we could get one of them to show up on our call here to discuss what the AFL-CIO is thinking about doing as regards the filibuster, so we can help them.
Well, that's a great, great, great suggestion. I hope George, you're in touch with Joel Siegel, who's going to put together the big call next. And we definitely need labor represented. And if we can pull that off, that would be great. So, George, if you'll connect with Joel and really work through that, that would be great.
Be glad to.
Okay, terrific. I want to point out Myra Reason. If you look on your screen, Myra Reason has posted a picture of the great Will Ryan. He just passed away this week. He was absolutely one of the finest people I ever met. Did voiceover in Hollywood for decades. He was actually Tigger in Winnie the Pooh. We could not have lost a more wonderful human being. It really kills me to talk about it. But Will, we miss you. We're a tremendous human being, and your spirit is with us for sure. So thank you, Myla, for posting that picture of Will Ryan. Brian Steinberg, and then Lynn Feinerman, and also Eric Lazarus. I'll get to you.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Am I going?
Yeah.
Okay, good. Okay. I do want to talk about, which is just not this one, so I want to address it to Andrea, but I do want to talk about another ballot initiative we're working on. Me and Jan are working on two in Michigan. I'll say it after this, though, if I have time after. But Andrea and Ray, one of the things that happened in Michigan, and I'd like the voting centers, if they do get established, to address, is that a lot of these campaigns, after they're done, they kind of pack up their balloons to go home. We talked about it in the first part of this conversation with Ohio. Ohio passed this great thing for redistricting reform, and then they sort of messed with it. But where was the big outrage and protest when they were messing with it? Michigan had the same thing happen after we passed emergency manager reform, which then, I don't know if you know about Michigan, but we had emergency managers. This led to the Flint water crisis. But in 2012, we passed reform, and they reversed it. So if we're talking about these centers, I think it'd be great that we have a counter to what happens at the ballot, that these things are locked in and we can protest and fight the reversal of these things. It's not just getting out the vote. It's after these campaigns happen, after these laws happen, we need to make sure these laws actually are enacted the way we want them to be acted, that we voted on to begin with. There wouldn't have been a Flint water crisis if we actually had the law we passed at the ballot, and a bunch of other things. So, and there wouldn't be a redistricting debacle in Ohio if we fought to really make the law that we passed happen. So I just want to throw my two cents in about that, that if we are sitting up.
Brian, I agree with you. I agree with you. This is how we work. The community puts together their list of demands. Then they find a candidate, I refer to them as a butt, who supports those demands. They work and get the butt elected. Then they hold the butt accountable to what they said, this is our community's demand. If the butt is working to accomplish those demands, great, we reelect the butt. If the butt is not working, we primary the butt because now we need a new butt. That is how democracy centers work. What do you want? What do you need? Who will support that? Hold them accountable. Did they do it? Reelect them or primary them and get somebody else in there. That's what they do. That's why it's year round. It never stops.
Absolutely. Ray, do you want to jump on that?
Yeah, just real quick, Andrea is absolutely right. And this is one of the ways that we combat a lot of the negativism that occurs when people tell you that they don't vote because their vote doesn't count. They don't believe their vote counts because they don't see anybody that gets things done. When you get people involved, voters involved at the grassroots local level, and they can see how they can hold people accountable, they know that their voices do matter.
Absolutely. I want to acknowledge real quick, Paul Ryder. Paul Ryder is on the call. He was a major figure in Ohio with the Citizen Action Group up in Cleveland. We worked together to fight the nuclear plant. And Paul is, I don't know if you want to plug in here, Paul, but Paul's going to be joining us in the future to talk about the effect of military spending and what the how the military really has gamed the system. And, you know, here we are yelling about $1 trillion or $2 trillion when the military sails through every year with a budget that's $1 trillion or $2 trillion. And so it's going to be great to have Paul with us. And Paul, I'm glad you're on the call now. If you want to jump in, raise your hand. Lynn Feinerman and then Tatanka.
Yeah. Very simple. The work, of course, is wonderful. Andrea knows I love her work. We profiled her for Women Rising Radio. Kiss out to you. I want to see Mr. Biden just executive order the John Lewis Voting Rights Act. I want to know if we can have a big session on what is the problem with getting him to do that. There can be tens, hundreds of thousands of people pressing him to do that. If he did it, I can guarantee his approval numbers would shoot up at least 10 points. And I want that to happen because we don't have the time to mess around. 22 is coming up. It's a huge midterm election, and it's being rigged in every which way but loose. So how can we get Biden to just executive order it? And what are the problems? Are there any constitutional problems? Are there any legal problems? Major. I want to know.
Yes.
Well, as we recall, I'm all for that. It should be part of the national Zoom that Joel organizes. I mean, just remember that the Emancipation Proclamation, which, by the way, if anybody's actually read the Emancipation Proclamation, it's a page and a half. I mean, he could have written the thing in an hour. And it's one of the most important documents in all of American history. And it was done by executive order. I'm 100% with you on that.
Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.